Right on.
The date is
April the 8th.
April the
8th. 2013.
And it's Eleanor Levine interviewing Alf Quinter.
Right. I'll turn this off.
Is that okay?
Sure. I'll turn you on. Good.
Who lived at 67 Ulster from the late 40s until 1963.
Right.
And between the ages of from 2 to about 18.
Right.
Okay. So I'm going to begin by asking you whether you have any idea, because you were very young, what prompted your parents to choose that neighborhood?
I don't think there was much of a choice in those days. First of all, anybody and everybody who came over from Europe after the war, as my parents did, all went to one specific neighborhood, which is downtown Toronto. It's not as if they had a choice of what suburb they were going to live in. Everybody migrated to downtown Toronto, which was the magnet for all post-World War II Jewish immigrants. The main reason, one of the main reasons probably, was that it was in close proximity to Kensington, which was the Jewish market, where my father had his store, which was not far from the Schmatte district.
The Schmatte, what does Schmatte mean?
Schmatte.
Just because this is going to be transcribed.
Schmatte is the colloquial word, the Yiddish word for rags.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Toronto at that time, as I'm sure was Montreal, had a very large textile industry. And so many of the people who came over from the old country were pressers, cutters, tailors, it was called schnodders, and a very large percentage of men and women worked in the textile industry. And that's why I think why they were attracted, one of the reasons they were attracted to that part of the city. I mean, it was just a natural lure that that's where everybody went to, and Ulster Street, of course. But this went on even before. I should say this didn't just happen at the end of the Second World War. My high school, Harvard Collegiate, had already been well recognized as the school that was virtually all Jewish, even in the earlier years. So downtown Toronto is where the Jews all moved to.
And your father had a business.
My dad had a store
market.
In the Kensington Market at the corner, actually on the very edge, or in the Kensington Market, really, at the corner of Baldwin and Spadina, mm-hmm. called the Ontario Discount House at 378 Spadina Avenue.
And what was that business?
He sold everything from crystal to radios, to luggage, to watches, to pens, to all kinds of knickknacks and gifts of all sorts, cameras. And I grew up working in that store, loved working in the store, and I tell everybody that's where I really learned to become a lawyer. Not at law school, but at my father's store.
Do you have any recollection how old you were when you first started to work there?
I was probably about 11 or 12.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I loved working there. We used to set up things outside the store. I used to love standing and selling things. And I just loved selling. And I loved decorating the store for Christmas with my mother, hanging up, I think it was the Christian side of me or whatever. I loved putting up Christmas decorations and spraying that snow on the windows with stencils. And I often tell people that I do the same thing as my dad did. My dad sold items with no education. He sold luggage, jewelry, watches. And I'm selling today because I negotiate settlements for people who have been maimed or lost loved ones or severely injured. And I'm doing the same thing that he was doing. I'm just doing it in a different way.
So you learned from the best.
I learned from the best.
Do you know how he started a business? I mean, he came as an immigrant.
He was a peddler. My dad originally was a peddler, and he used to walk around with luggage going to little towns. I took me with him once on the train all the way almost to past London towards Windsor, and he'd sell to farmers. He'd set up little stands at cattle auctions in Thamesville, London, Chatham, and my mother finally got after him to stop running around and driving around or schlepping around, and got him to finally settle down and open up a store instead of running around. But he used to actually go to restaurants and come up to people, and he used to have watches up and down his arms. Mister, you want to buy a watch? And he'd pull up his sleeve, and he'd have 15 watches on his arms, and that's how he'd sell watches. And I was given a lovely award a few years ago by the Ontario Tri Lawyers Association. And it was all lawyers and judges in the audience, as well as friends and family. And I told everybody about my dad and how he used to come up to people and say, "Ivana Baya Vach." And to this day, lawyers will come up to me in court and they'll say, "Hi, Alf, Ivana Baya Vach."
Lovely story, yeah. What was Kensington Market like at that time?
It was wonderful. It was all virtually all Jewish. Uh-huh. And everybody knew everybody else. And the bakeries, I remember Lotman's really well, Lotman's Imperial Bakery and Perlmutter's Bakery. And we remember the butcher shops with the, we remember the fish stores, remember the appetizer stores with the barrels. You know, I have another career, I don't know if I told you this or not, but I also do stand-up comedy. And I'm doing a show tonight for B'nai B'rith, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
I also do stand-up comedy, and I tell stories about buying herring in the old stores. I'm sure it was the same in Montreal. You go in and you bought herring or pickles from a barrel. And in all those stores, you bought a live carp. And they take out the carp and they take a bowling pin and smash the carp over the head with the bowling pin. And I can tell you one of my famous stories that I tell if you want to hear it.
Please.
I don't want to fill up your tape.
Of course.
I went to King Edward School, which is right downtown Toronto, Bathurst and College. And I was in grade 2, and Mr. Knight had announced to the class that we were going to have a pet show and tell day. And you can bring a dog or a cat or a fish to school. And I went home and I said to my parents, "The teacher had gesagt in Yiddish that I have to bring a fish to school." My father did, and you can see what's coming. My father went around the corner to the Kensington Market and brought home a huge carp. We put the carp in the bathtub, as everybody did. In fact, there's a children's book now called "There's a Carp in My Bathtub" that somebody wrote. And the next morning, we got one of those great big gray tubs that everybody used to take a bath in on Saturday night with the two handles at the end. And I remember walking down Lippincott Street, to King Edward School. I was on the back. I forget who was on the front. And we walked in, and Mr. Knight was standing there with his bow tie, and he looked at it as if he was expecting it. He said, "Just put it to the back of the class." And all the kids were totally freaked out. They had their dogs and their cats and their goldfish, and I walked in with a huge carp. The people were klutzing. And every time the carp swished around with its tail, a gallon of water would go flying out of the tub. And every 15, 20 seconds, you'd hear splash, splash. And the carp didn't make it through the weekend. But I often tell the story, and I sent that story into Stuart McLean to the Vinyl Cafe, but they haven't read it yet, I think because of the animal lovers, because the carp dies at the end.
But what did the cats and dogs do when they saw this carp?
I don't remember, but the carp never made it past the weekend. But I always tell everybody the story is as fresh today as it was in 1952. And to this day, people have stopped me in restaurants, and they go, "Alfie Quinter." I'll go, "Yes." "King Edward." I'll go, "Yes." "The carp." I'll say, "Yes." That's my carp story. That story is posted on the internet under King Edward Public School, if it's still there, under Golden Memories. To celebrate King Edward School's 50th or 80th anniversary, I posted that story. It's a 100% true story.
It's so wonderful. My grandson is going into grade 8 at King Edward's next year.
I walked by there once. I was coming from the Toronto Western Hospital, and I was walking up to my office. I was going to go to the Mars for lunch, where I grew up in the Mars restaurant. And I popped into King Eddie. And, of course, right away somebody came out and said, "Yes, can I help you?" They thought I was who knows what. I said, "Actually, I'm a graduate of this esteemed institution. Is there a room of the memorabilia or anything?" They said, "No, it's not here. It's kept somewhere else." But I met the principal, and I taught her, and she didn't even know the King Edward School song.
You taught her?
I sang it for her. I remembered every word. And she didn't even know there was a school song. I sang it for her. Is that funny or what?
I interviewed her father because he was the vice principal at Central Tech. And one of the people I interviewed is the father of this
funny?
Woman who's now the principal.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, yeah.
So it shows you. And that's right. I think she told me that her father had gone to Harvard, if this is the same principal. I don't remember. But anyway, I'm...
But Kensington Market played a big role in your life.
Very
much so.
Your
father had his business there. And
that's where we bought all our groceries. We bought our birthday cakes there. When you bought a chicken, the blowtorch, I remember they used to blowtorch. Did you ever see that?
No.
They would flick the chicken.
Yeah. Flick meaning?
They'd pluck. They'd pluck all the...
After it was dead.
Yes, yes. They'd pluck all the feathers off the chicken.
Yeah.
And then they'd take a blowtorch and burn all the pin feathers off.
Oh.
And I remember the smell of the burning flesh from the chickens. That was one thing he remembered. The carp, I remember, in the fish stores, the pickled barrels. And the Dater's cheese store, I remember very, very well. They had every kind of cheese under the sun. Old Mr. Dater behind the counter. It turned out that Mr. Dater had a degree from Guelph Agricultural College. Unheard of in those days for a Jew to go to agricultural college.
And also for them to have university educations.
Yeah, yeah. And he had a fascinating store selling all kinds of cheeses under the sun. And my mother bought my clothes in Kensington Market. And it's very funny because I'll tell you why. The idea was to get out of downtown Toronto and to move north as fast as you could. And when my children were growing up, we were living in the Bayview and York Mills area, but there was a place down in Spadina Avenue near where my father's store was called Chalky's.
Oh, yeah. I know Chalky's, and I know Chalky. Yeah.
The idea was that you didn't want... I felt self-conscious, and I had an inferiority complex because my mother bought my clothes in Kensington, whereas once you moved north, your mother bought your clothes at Lawrence Plaza, a store called Morgan's. It was Lee's store, or Eaton's, or Simpson's,
Okay.
or Yorkdale. Mm-hmm. And here my mother was buying my clothes in the Kensington Market, which, of course...
Even after you moved north?
No, this is when I lived downtown.
Got
it. Yet when my children were growing up, suddenly everybody was going down to Chalky's to buy their clothes. Not only that, but they were wearing sweatshirts that said, Chalky's of the Avenue. And I remember saying to my wife, we've just come full circle. Not everybody is running downtown. Just like today, everybody wants to live downtown.
Yes.
Right. Everybody wants to live downtown. And when I was growing up, you couldn't get out fast enough. And as I say...
So do me a favor, stay with that for a minute. What was the attitude? You couldn't get out fast enough. What was that about?
The attitude was, as soon as your parents achieved any level of success... The first thing, when I do my comedy show, I talk about this. Mainly I talk about driving. I can do my whole routine here. The first thing, the greenies, you know what I mean by the greenies.
But you have to tell the tape.
You know what I mean by the greenies.
Yeah.
The greenies are the immigrants who came over, like my parents. The first, other than a home, the first thing the greenies bought when they succeeded was?
A car.
And what car did they buy?
A Cadillac. A Cadillac.
The funny thing is, the greenies could only drive on three streets. And they were?
Spadina.
Number one?
College?
Collega Street. Okay? What Collega means, friend, in Yiddish. College, Collega, and Bethesda.
And Bethesda.
Bethesda Street. And there's stories that I tell about one of my parents' friends, I won't mention the name, who made a wrong turn and ended up on the Queen Elizabeth Highway, and right away pulled over, gets out of his car, and is standing beside his Cadillac like this, oi, 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 oi. And of course, right away, the police came over. He said, what's the problem, sir? He says, I don't know where I'm going. The officer says, where did you come from? He says, Poland. and so
they had this little shtetl right in the area of college.
It was very much almost a shtetl because you had your shuls. I had my bar mitzvah at the Hebrew Men of England.
Where's that?
The Londoner shul, which was directly across the street from my father's store.
Oh, right, in the market.
And it was on Spadina Avenue.
Right.
And it was a little bit east, and it was on the east side of Spadina. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's there now, but it was a very large shul. Remember where the old Switchers used to be?
Yes.
Across the street from Switchers. It would have been up the street from Shopsies, north of Shopsies. And it was hit by lightning and it burned. It burned down. And
the shul burned down.
It was a Hebrew Men of England, modeled after a London synagogue in England. And the bima was right in the middle of the shul, as opposed to the eastern wall. And there are so many shuls. There's still shuls in the area. You still have your shul down on Bellevue. What's it called? There's a couple. The Minster is still there. And they've been renovated, some of them.
Yeah, some of those have had a real revival.
Revival. There's been a tremendous revival. The old, the one on the Nariver is now the new Nariver.
Oh, yeah.
It is now
that's a thriving
reconstructionist,
shul.
Yeah. So it was The you know, it was a real community. Everybody had their corner store. We had the Yidl. We called it the Yidl. It was one of our stores. Our shul that we davened at was at Brunswick and Ulster. It was a shtibl. You know what a shtibl is?
Yes, of course. Do you want to say it for the tape?
A shtibl is a little house.
Yeah.
And little homes were converted into synagogues. And that's where we davened. And it was the late Rabbi Kelman, Abba L'Sholem, his father was the rabbi. Rabbi Kelman from Beth Emmet, who's now gone. His father was the rabbi at our shtibl.
So the Neriver was there.
But it was an ultra-Orthodox shul.
Oh, the Neriver was egalitarian.
Yeah, the Neriver was an Orthodox shul. And I went to the YMHA was originally at Brunswick in college.
And you went there.
And I went there, but really, it was, by the time I started going to the Y, it was already blue in Spadina. The JCC, where the, what do you call it is now, the, what do they call it?
The Miles Nadell.
The Miles Nadell Center, that was our Y.
And did you use that place?
All the time, but I also went to the Kiwanis K Club.
I went
to the K Club.
What's, I don't know what that is.
The K Club was a club at the corner of Bloor. It was on Baptist Street, south of Bloor, on the west side, under a church. And because so many of my friends were not Jewish growing up, I was brought there. It was basically it's a wonderful place where it kept me off the streets, I like to say, because my parents were both working in my father's store all the time. So I almost raised myself. The K Club saved me. I loved it because I learned to play floor hockey there. I learned to play basketball there. I learned to play ice hockey there. I learned to play chess there. And they sent me to summer camp. They had a camp. They had a camp called Camp Kiwanis that cost $12 for 2 weeks. I didn't know it was a camp for underprivileged children. I didn't realize. I thought all camps cost $12 for 2 weeks. I remember it went up to 15 at one point. But every time you came, you brought a quarter. 25, and it went into a little cup, and you saved up over the winter so you could go to camp for 2 weeks. And it was fabulous. There was a little bit of anti-Semitism, not a lot. Some people had learned things from their parents. But it was terrific. And I spent a lot of time there. But for social things, meeting girls, etc., because the K-Club was all boys. Mm-hmm. You went to the YMHA at Bloor and Spadina.
And did you do anything else at the YMHA?
Yeah, I belonged to a club, and we had dances and socials, and it was very much a social thing. Everybody hung out. That's where the kids from up north came down to hang out. And then they go back north, and they say, oh, you're still living in Ulster Street. Oh, that's too bad.
Oh,
you're still downtown.
And did you feel that way, too,
yeah,
to some extent?
Yeah, with the kids, yes. When the kids moved up north, they became sort of elevated. In fact, we used to hitchhike. We always hitchhiked everywhere we went. We used to hitchhike up north. When you got north of Eglinton, the air got cleaner. It sort of was like you're going up the mountain. You're making aliyah. It really was very exciting to go to dances at these northern schools. And to go to Lawrence Plaza was like, wow.
So a lot of that must have been quite new up at Lawrence. I mean, you were living in a house that was probably built in 1900 or 1880.
Yeah, they were building around Lawrence, but they were really building in Bathurst Manor.
So
a lot of people, like my cousin and my late partner, all moved to Bathurst Manor, and that's where they were building, Shepherd and Bathurst, into homes up there. And and that's where it was very exciting to go up there because it was new. Everything was new.
Yeah.
Whereas we lived in an old house.
Okay, let me stop you there for a minute. I'm wondering, you moved there around 1948,
right,
approximately. You and your mother and your father.
And my two brothers.
Oh, okay. What number are you in?
I'm the oldest of three brothers.
Okay. Did anybody else live in that house with you?
Yes.
Okay, that's
when
what I'm asking.
When we first came to Canada, my uncle, my father's brother, came over with his wife and two children, a boy and a girl. They lived upstairs, we lived downstairs.
That's okay, that's where I'm going with
my
this.
Uncle, Naftali.
Mr. Quinter?
Yeah?
Mr. Sandberg, thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry. My uncle Naftali, who had come to Canada before the war, had done very well. And he brought my father and his brother over. They bought the house originally, which I guess they gave to my parents or sold to them. I don't know how it worked. But they lived upstairs, we lived downstairs, and then they moved, very soon after that, they moved out and they moved north, and we stayed there. Today, my cousin, who lived upstairs, we both live in the same building in Florida. He lives in the same condo as me. So we're always joking that we still live in the same building. This time I live upstairs and he lives downstairs. Right. I'm on the 17th floor. He's on the 16th floor. So,
can we continue for a few minutes?
Sure.
Should we stop?
Yeah.
Okay. You said to me that the neighborhood was very Jewish at that time.
Very Jewish, except I had a lot of friends who were Ukrainian.
In the neighborhood? They lived there?
Yes, they were Ukrainian in the neighborhood, and some are still very close friends of mine, but I think with some of them, their parents weren't enamored, I think, with Jews. And I remember having some friends who were Ukrainian, who were very close friends of mine, who I was never in their home. And I suspect today that the reason I was never in their home is that their parents had certain feelings that they brought with them from the old country. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we have to suspect it.
Yeah.
So the neighborhood was largely Jewish.
Jewish.
What language did you speak at home?
I grew up in a Yiddish-speaking home. Uh-huh. I always spoke Yiddish to my parents.
Uh-huh.
Answered in Yiddish, whereas my brothers always answered in English.
That was the difference
that's
between...
That's right. And today I'm still fluent in Yiddish, and uh-huh. I actually do Yiddish stand-up comedy. And I can do entire shows in Yiddish, but it's difficult to find Yiddish-speaking audiences.
Yeah.
Because either they're hard of hearing because they're so old, or they fall asleep.
And they have to be our generation.
They have to be our
because
generation.
The younger
Except
people.
I did a show in Melbourne, Australia, uh-huh. to a full house of Yiddish speakers of younger people. When my son was in law school in Sydney, we traveled around, my wife and I traveled around Australia, and did a show in Melbourne to a full house of Yiddish speakers. The funny thing about that is that when Australians speak English, they have an Aussie accent.
Yes.
When we speak English, we have a Canadian accent. But when you speak Yiddish, you both sound the same. Isn't that fascinating?
Well, after I turn the tape off, I'm going to ask you about these performances. Where did the kids play when you were growing up?
In the lane.
Uh-huh.
In the lane and in the schoolyard. We had a lane right beside our house, and then there's a parking area, a bunch of garages. We played baseball there. We played in the lane with our bicycles, or we went to King Eddie's schoolyard, mm-hmm. or Central Tech was just up the street.
Yeah,
and we
right
went to
there.
Christie Pitts swimming.
Uh-huh.
And... Everything was very neighborhood oriented. Played in the streets, street hockey.
So the kids were right there, out on the street
kids
with
were
the
right
parents
on the street,
hovering.
Sure. That's right.
Did you have a backyard where you were?
We had a small backyard, yeah.
And how was that used in any way at all?
We buried our turtles there when they died.
That was its greatest.
Yeah. Not much.
Yeah.
Not much. It was a small backyard. I don't remember too much happening there.
Now you were on Ulster, which is the main street. Did you have a front porch? Was
yes, our house is still there. It looks exactly the way it did when I lived there.
I'm going to go look at it.
67 Ulster.
Did anybody use it or the front porch?
Yes, at night, hot August nights.
Uh-huh.
People sat on their front porches, because for some reason I think in those days, summers used to be hotter than they are now. I don't know, maybe it was, I'm imagining
well,
it.
Well, nobody had air conditioning.
Yeah, that's right. People sat out on their front porches
and they
spoke. They talked to each other.
Yeah.
We had the Friedmans next door.
Uh-huh.
And then the Schwartzes next door. We had a lady across the street who threw brooms at dogs. When they came, we used to call her the old witch. When the dog came on the lawn, we remember two things. When a horse came along with the horses, because milkmen had horses, junkmen had horses, and the horses pooped on the street, she'd come running out to pick it up for her lawn. She'd always come running out.
So she saw it in a very positive way.
She scooped up the horse poop and put it on the lawn, and if a dog came on or kids came on, she'd throw brooms.
So she liked the horse poop much more than
she
liked dogs.
That's right. That's right.
You mentioned briefly, and I'd like to just return to it a little, the stores, the corner stores, and also horses. So how the horses, the stores, just tell me about the shopping in addition to what was happening with Kensington Market.
Well, first of all, the stores were, there were corner stores everywhere. One was Smith's in Brunswick and in Ulster. Then there was the Yiddel. Never did know his name, just the Yiddel, which means, of course, the old Jew.
So that's what your parents called
it. The Yiddel, And then there was Boyko's, they were Ukrainian,
uh-huh.
at the other side. And then there was, because there was a Ukrainian hall around the corner from us. And then there was Mike's across the street from Boyko's. And we used to collect bottles and cash them in for 2 cents a bottle and collect hangers. And we used to shovel walks for money. And I sold programs at the exhibition and at the ball games and scalp tickets. And any way we could find to make money, we would find to make money. anywhere we could. We were basically street kids.
Yeah.
Who raised ourselves and managed fine. Nobody had peanut allergies. Nobody carried, what do you call it, anaphylactic needles. Nobody worried about this or about that. Nobody got poisoned. Nobody put cleanser on their hands every day. Somehow we survived.
Was the neighborhood considered a safe place?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. In fact, the first time I heard of a stabbing at Harvard Collegiate, I was shocked. And now there have been stabbing, shootings, etc. Harvard Collegiate. The neighborhood was basically considered a safe place. We hitchhiked everywhere.
And that was way beyond the neighborhood.
We hitchhiked to the exhibition. We hitchhiked to go up north. Sure, it was considered safe.
What about getting from one place to another? Who had cars? Who used public?
When I turned 16, my dad turned over his car to me because he was a terrible, terrible driver. He was an awful driver, and I started driving. The kids at Harvard, some of them had cars. They were working, and they bought cars. And anybody who had a car was the hero because he took everybody. I remember the night that President Kennedy was shot. We used to go to Harvey's in Richmond Hill, the original Harvey's. The very first Harvey's was in Richmond Hill, and we'd all jump into somebody's car. We'd all drive to Richmond Hill. Must have been an hour's drive in those days, a very long, long drive. We all go to Richmond Hill to the original Harvey's for hamburger. And I remember going the night that Kennedy was shot. It was a Friday. I'd written an exam that day.
We all remember that, don't we?
Yeah, and I remember going to Harvey's. But yeah, some of us had cars. And anybody who had a car was a Gunsa Knocker. It was a big shot. And
was public transportation available?
We had streetcars.
Which streets?
We had streetcars on Bathurst and on Spadina. Uh-huh. Not college. Uh-huh. Always had streetcars. Yeah. Buses, I don't remember so much. Buses, when you went north. I remember you took a streetcar to St. Clair. If you wanted to go to Shepherd and Bathurst, there was two fares. You took a streetcar to St. Clair, and St. Clair was the loop. That's where the car looped around and came back. And at St. Clair, you got on another bus, a bus in the streetcar. When the bus hit Lawrence, you had to put in a second fare.
Because that was out of the city.
That's right. A double fare.
Okay, I think we're going to stop. This has been totally delightful. But I know you have to find a way to...
I could go on for hours. Feel free to come back.
Okay. I just want to say, Alf Quinter, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
I've enjoyed it.